Have you been hitting the books and listening to lectures all day? It's time to relax, to unwind, and listen up. This is Brooke from Campus Chronicles, your go-to podcast for everything student life. No matter where you are in your academic journey, we have you covered. Think of us as a trusted mentor, friend, and confidant who always has your back. We'll be sharing inspiring stories, thought-provoking insights, and practical advice to help you succeed in and out of the classroom. So get ready to be inspired, enlightened, and entertained. Hello, hello, everyone. I'm so incredibly excited to introduce you to a wonderful woman. Her name is Clarissa Constantine, and she's the founder of the Parent-Tween Connection. Clarissa, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Brooke. I love talking with young people's families. And, you know, yeah, the name of my organization is Parent-Tween Connection. And we say that we largely support families with kids between the ages of 10 and 20, but that certainly includes college students. And those are very perforated edges because, you know, life doesn't, you know, challenges don't start when kids turn 10 and they don't end when we turn 20.
Well, we all know the frontal lobe isn't even developed until we're 25. So
exactly.
Plenty of challenges up until then and even after.
Oh, and then some, you know, and some, for some, and especially those, you know, biologically male, sometimes it's closer to 27 or 28. I'm not saying that to cause trouble. I'm just saying it as a biological fact.
It is a fact. Before we get started, we dive into all the things you have to share. Give us some insight into who you are, how your organization got started, and all of that beautiful jazz.
Absolutely. So I actually have been a test preparation coach for 26 years. So I have worked with tens of thousands of students and families at this point, navigating the college admissions, grad school admissions process, primarily for folks who are wanting to go to school here in the US, but certainly folks traveling abroad or going, you know, expanding horizons in other continents. And Parent-Tween Connection actually started when friends of mine and my husband's were going through some real challenging times with their daughter. She was 15 and she was making all of the not healthy decisions that she could make. And the mom said to me, I just wish I had other parents to talk to. And it struck me that there really isn't community for parents of older kids. There's a large community for parents of littles, but there's a much smaller community. There's a lot more immediacy in the challenges that families face with older kids. You know, when we start talking sex, drugs, rock and roll, like, ha-ha, not ha-ha. There's a lot that we could do as community to help families and help young adults.
And it's kind of bizarre. You think of mommy groups, mommy and music playtime. None of that exists for older people. And it keeps not only the parents, but the teens and tweens and young adults themselves isolated in groups where they're not necessarily engaged with their family members or their parents, which is such an important thing, particularly when we think multigenerationally or intergenerationally, to learn from those around you. And I can speak for myself. We don't always want to learn from our mom or our dad. But we could learn from our friend's parents or another trusted adult. And the lack of that it's very interesting.
And, you know, it takes one person to save a life. It literally takes one connection for a young adult. So I would say, before we go any further, for the young adults who are listening, if you're struggling, find an adult. Like, find a, you know, somebody even with 2 or 3 years experience on you. Maybe it's a licensed mental health professional. Maybe it's a professor. Maybe it's a mentor. Maybe it's somebody at an internship. But look for an adult whom you can connect with, because when times get tough, having that one person can make literally a life or death difference.
I'm curious, what was your university experience like? If you're willing to share that.
My university experience was fantastic. I grew up in South Florida and my mom and I struggled. That's another part of the driver with what I do with Parent-Tween Connection. And so I was one of those kids that wanted to get as far away as I could, frankly. So I went to college in Connecticut. I got my degree in basically audio engineering. And I worked a lot. I put myself through school. I was always hustling because I came from pretty meager means. So there was definitely a lot of workaholic tendencies. And I worked a lot. I tried to play as much as I could. I didn't know how to play real well because I'd grown up in a home where all the chores and the work and all that stuff had to happen first. Play was secondary. And it's taken me a long time to recognize that play and downtime really are critical to mental health. but I started a chapter, I should say restarted a chapter of a women's music organization when I was on campus. I loved my undergrad experience. Absolutely loved it.
When you say that play was hard for you, what did that look like? Especially when you were younger, how did that manifest in you? Because it manifests differently in everyone.
I never learned the value of taking a break. It was always drive, drive, drive. I earned praise based on my accomplishments, based on my grades, based on all of the outward trappings as they exist for a teenager.
And that is such a scary thing for a high performer.
Guilty as charged. I also, interesting fact, chose not to drink. My parents didn't drink. And so it wasn't part of the culture that I grew up in. And frankly, I was terrified of date rape when I went to college. And, you know, as a young woman at the time, that's a very real concern. And so, you know, there are some folks who will use a little bit of dancing oil, as it were, to help, you know, ease the tension going into a social setting. I had my group of friends. We hung out. We'd, you know, we'd do our thing, whatever. We'd go to parties. I just chose not to drink, but I certainly wouldn't take downtime during the week. It was work, 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 school, 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 and had to fill every moment with being productive.
What thoughts went through your head if you tried to relax?
Oh my gosh, the same thoughts that still go through my head 20 years later.
Oh, I'm curious.
Of I could be, should be, ought to be doing X, Y, Z, you know, that is either revenue generating or it's cleaning the house, or I have phone calls. You know, it's taken a lifetime to work to unlearn. I'm getting better at it, but it's, you know, old habits die hard.
Your dreams will shift and change. What advice would you give around navigating that?
So, interesting factoid. One of the professionals in my network is a career navigator. He supports young adults in identifying what direction they want to go in life. We are in a period of technological advancement and digitization that has the likes of which we've never seen before. And one of the points that he made in a recent podcast that I hosted, where he was a guest, is that 75% of the jobs that will exist in 2035 do not exist yet, right? 75% of the jobs that will exist in a decade. And by the way, if you're a freshman and you're in a four-year program, that's almost halfway there, just saying, right? So like, if you're going into something because you're like, I've always wanted to be X. Okay, great. You've always wanted to be. And we collectively cannot conceive of what Y, Z, and A through W are going to be when we round out the top of the alphabet, right? I was like, what are the options even going to be when you graduate college? There's going to be so many different options. Of course, you're going to change. Excuse me, you're going to grow. And as you have those new experiences, your interests are going to change. There's nothing wrong with that. You're human. That's part of the human condition. Like, you stop changing when you're dead. Like, again, I don't mean to be morbid, but that's the reality of it. You know?
It is the reality. And sometimes you're confronted with something that is a dreamlike state. For me, I always thought I wanted to do something. It was very much not what I wanted to do, but I got a job that was very, quote unquote, impressive very, very quickly. And I didn't like it, right? Because I wasn't confronted with the reality of what that really looked like. And what I would say to students too is be honest with yourself around what you want your life to look like. That's a big thing.
Absolutely. You know, I fell into that as well. So I mentioned that my degree was in audio engineering. Music has always been my passion. Thankfully, I guess, maybe I haven't actually worked a day of my life in that industry, ironically, because, you know, music has always been a big, 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 big part of my world. My mom was a violinist. I am so grateful that I cannot remember a time that I didn't know how to read music, because I learned that from her at a very early age. I would always go to rehearsals and concerts with her. Then I started playing and singing and whatnot, you know? And so when I was looking at college, I was like, oh, I want to be in music, but I need a real job. And I didn't realize until the end of my first semester of senior year that the real job that I had chosen was something that I freaking hated. I don't care about the mixing and the post-production and all of that stuff. I don't care about the differences in the microphones. And I just was never excited about it. And it wasn't interesting to me. Oh, and on a very fundamental level, I didn't stop to think about the fact that if you're living, if you're working in a recording studio, you don't see the sun and you don't get fresh air.
Which, if you value those things, it's not going to work out.
I work by the pool as often as I can because it's fresh air and sunshine. Even if it's 93 degrees Fahrenheit, it's hotter than blazes. I'm outside when I can be. I open the windows and my husband is always like, you know, you don't have to open every window. And I'm like, oh, but yes, I do. Oh, but yes, I do.
But it's a part of your quirks and it's a part of who you are. And that's something to consider when you're thinking about your life. And of course, your parents know you, they love you, but they don't always know what makes you happy or what makes your heart sing. And that's completely okay.
And this is part of the college experience. And to be clear, it doesn't end when you graduate college. This is an evolving, ongoing, like never ending experience of who am I? What's really important to me? Sometimes your values or the things that are important to you change over time.
What does keeping that open communication look like in the college years?
The first thing that comes to my mind is recognize that by and large, most parents want you to be happy and they want you to be successful. Their definition of success may not match your definition of success. Even if you have older siblings, they may have been the parent of your older siblings as college students, but they've never been the parent of you as a college student. And to the point that you're still growing and learning and evolving as a human, so are they. And, you know, one of the things that I said at my mom's services when she passed, I never questioned that she loved me. I never questioned that she wanted what was best for me. But her definition of what was best for me and my definition of what was best for me frequently did not align. As an example, when my husband proposed to me and I called to tell her that we were engaged, her response, no word of a lie, was, well, all right, if this is what you think you want. So she did a very effective job at cutting down communication. I knew that I couldn't talk to her about it because she was very clear in her opinions. So when I share this, I want listeners to recognize that I've been there, even though I did go a career path, at least education-wise, that she thought I should go, right? In life, I didn't go the direction that she thought I should. The trap that we fell into was that we spent so much time, I believe, each of us trying to prove that we were quote unquote right about what was best for me, that we lost the ability to be kind and it cost us our relationship. So if you are navigating tough situations like that with your parents, number one, you can't change them. You can't change their beliefs. You can influence those. And when you influence others in general, in order to influence, you have to stay calm and kind and respectful.
Mm-hmm. You can't be reactive. And it's easy to get reactive. It's so easy when somebody's questioning you or disagreeing with you.
Absolutely. And this goes in any relationship. Maybe you're struggling with a professor. Maybe you're in an amorous relationship. You've got a boyfriend or a girlfriend where you keep having the same fight or the same argument or something, right? You cannot influence anyone else if you are not calm and collected. You fly off the handle and everything's going to go sideways. So remember that your parents have never been the parent of you as a college-age student. They're struggling to figure it out as well. And if you, again, you can't control them. You can influence them. You can control your reactions.
And I would add, know your pattern. So for me, I would keep my issues bottled up, oftentimes for a year at a time. And then I would have, I have this problem and this problem, you know, major, major meltdowns. So know what your communication style is. Do you keep it bottled up? Do you share every time you get upset? Do you have a tendency to hide? Do you have a tendency to overshare? What are those? Because that's going to help you with your communication with your family.
And this is where working with a mental health professional can be supportive. Mental health professionals, especially if you have any kind of traumatic experience in your past, whether it's, as we say, kind of in the mental health world, big T trauma or little T trauma, like little things can be traumatic and people tend to gloss over it and be like, oh, that wasn't a big deal. But if it lands just right, man, it can hurt and it can be damaging. So mental health professionals can definitely help with some of that. Or working with a life coach, a communication coach, you know, a mentor, people who have developed these communication skills more. Things like learning to pause and breathe. One of the things that I encourage parents to do when they ask a question is to ask the question and then zip it. It's one of our foundations. I call it nod and smile. So, you know, and I was just practicing this last night. I was in a little bit of a heated conversation with my husband, and he just looked at me at one point and he's like, "What are you thinking?" I was like, "I'm just counting to 30 and I'm letting you say what you need to say." I don't always do it. Some, you know, we often listen to respond, not listen to understand. You know, so when you get into that situation, pause and count to 30. Give yourself a chance to breathe, because it helps you gain clarity. And let me tell you, when you get into those spaces, man, you say things that hurt and you can't unsay them. And all of us do it. You know, I think a lot of us look at our parents and we expect our parents to have it all figured out, because at least when we were younger, they did, right? And that's part of the challenge of the teenagers.
They could fix the magnitude of a 2-year-old's problem, but a 20-year-old's problem is much more complex.
Exactly. And so again, to the point that they're navigating this for the first time with you themselves, they don't necessarily have all the answers. Stay calm, stay kind, pause and breathe. One of the other things that can happen that you can do if you find that you're ending up in the same conversations, the same heated conversations, is grab a sheet of paper and say to the other person, "Hey, Brooke, you know what? I'm tired of having the same conversation. We end up in the same place every single time. I want to approach this differently. I have a pencil and I have a piece of paper, and I just want you to tell me, like, just kind of like verbal vomit. What are all your thoughts? And I'm going to write them down. I am not going to respond." By giving yourself something else to do and something else to focus on, that you're listening to what they're saying, like you're taking notes in a class or in a lecture, it helps limit, not completely eradicate, but limit the likelihood that you're going to react rather than respond. And then once you've got all those points written down, you can go back and say, "Okay, here are the big things that I heard come through." Again, did that this morning. You know, in our day and age, it was via text because I was out walking my dogs, but I texted my husband, and, you know, relative to the conversation we had last evening. And I was like, "Hey, I heard you say X, Y, Z, and I need some clarification on this. Can you tell me more?" So again, pausing, taking note, and going, "Hey, here's what I'm hearing. Is there anything else?" Ask questions, because, hey, you know what? Maybe you did say or do something that hurt their feelings. Like, you're not perfect either. And that's okay. Like, let's own our own story. That's one of the letters of the foundations of connection that we talked about, Brooke, is own your own story. Own your own part in what's going on. Like, you're not perfect any more than your parents are. So, you know, I look back at some of the engagements that I had with my mom, and I'm horrified because I know they must have hurt her feelings. And that wasn't my intention. I was just struggling to be heard and understood. But again, we get in those spaces where we're heated, where we feel hurt. And for some of us, when we're a dog backed into a corner, we lash out. And I think that's more the human nature than not.
I love these. Now, as we wrap up here, is there anything final that you want to say to people? I've really enjoyed just the parental, young person relationship communication, because it is a big thing. It's a big thing. You live with them, then you don't live with them. And that's a major, major pivot and transition.
I think it just comes back to be kind and give other people the benefit of the doubt. If any of you have heard of the sociologist Brené Brown.
Yeah. Who hasn't heard of Brené Brown these days?
Right. She's fantastic. She tells a story in one of her books. I don't remember which one, because I think I've read them all, where she ended up being a roommate with somebody at a speaker event. And she was just horrified by this other person's behavior as a roommate. And
I think I've been there. That's why I pay for my own rooms.
Correct.
I'll be like, I'll pay both sides.
Yep, exactly. But her therapist said to her, "Do you think that this other person was genuinely doing the best that they knew how?" And she was like, "Absolutely not. Because any normal human being who wasn't raised in a barn knows this, 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 this." And it came full circle for her when she had a conversation with another woman who was very judgmental of women who didn't breastfeed until their kids were 2 or 3 years old or whatever. Well, and Brené actually struggled to breastfeed. She just didn't produce enough milk. And all of a sudden it like was like a 2x4 to the head, where she was like, "But I did the best I could. My body couldn't do anymore. I could not physically produce enough milk to feed my child from my breast until that age." And so that really was like a big kick for her of like, my best may not be somebody else's best, and my best isn't even the same every day. And in that same concept, she had a conversation with her husband where she was like, you know, do you think that other people do the best that they can? And he paused and he looked back at her and he said, you know, I genuinely don't know whether that they are, and I can't judge whether they are, but I know that I'm happier when I assume that they are. And so I think that comes into giving people the benefit of the doubt. When somebody doesn't do things the way you would do them, be kind, be gracious, and recognize that maybe they really are doing their best today. And maybe their best today looks different than the best looked yesterday. And that's okay, because yours is going to look different too.
Ending out here, if somebody wants to find you, learn about your community, learn about your offerings, where do they find you?
www.parenttweenconnection.com. It's parenttweenconnection.com.
Thank you for joining me on Campus Chronicles. I hope you found our discussion informative, inspiring, entertaining, and fun. We are always working hard to make sure that our episodes are the very best they can be, which means we need your help. If you liked what you heard, remember to hit the follow button on your favorite podcast platform and drop us a review. It helps us to connect with more students who are hungry for success. And remember, the journey never stops. Keep listening, keep learning, keep growing. See you next week for another amazing episode of Campus Chronicles.